Welcome to SCOTUSCast. On March 18, 2008, the court decided the case of Washington State Grange versus Washington State Republican Party. The court held that Washington's modified blanket primary system does not violate the First and Fourteenth Amendments' right to freedom of association by denying political parties control over which candidates to endorse. Miller Baker of McDermott, Will, and Emery discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Attorney Baker.
On March 18, 2008, the Supreme Court issued a 7-2 decision in Washington State Grange versus Washington State Republican Party, a case from the Ninth Circuit involving Washington State's two-step general election system enacted by Ballot Initiative 872 in 2004. Under that system, all candidates, regardless of party affiliation or lack thereof, appear on the so-called primary ballot. Initiative 872 provides that candidates are to be identified on the ballot by any, quote, party preference, quote, or independent status expressed by candidates in their filing papers. Although political parties remain free to nominate or to endorse candidates, a political party's decision to so nominate or endorse a given candidate does not limit the ability of candidates outside the party to appear on the ballot and to claim a preference for that party. And the ballot does not distinguish between the bona fide nominee or endorsee of the party and candidates outside the party that claim a preference for that party. The two top vote-getters in a primary, regardless of their expression of party preference or independent status, advance to the general election ballot, which similarly identifies the two candidates by their self-described party preference or independent status. The Ninth Circuit held that Initiative 872 severely burdened the right of association of political parties by allowing candidates not endorsed or nominated by the party to associate with the party. That had the effect, in the Ninth Circuit's view, of diluting the party's political brand by allowing outsiders to hijack their political trademark. The Ninth Circuit noted that the state had not articulated any compelling state interest for imposing such a burden, and that to the extent any such interest existed, such interest could be served by a more narrowly tailored system that did not include any party preference designation on the ballot. The Supreme Court reversed in a decision written by Justice Thomas and joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Stevens, Souter, Ginsburg, Breyer, and Alito. Chief Justice Roberts wrote a concurring opinion, which was joined by Justice Alito. Justice Scalia, joined by Justice Kennedy, dissented. The court's opinion began by observing that the political party's challenge to Initiative 872 is a facial challenge under which a plaintiff can prevail only by establishing that there is no set of circumstances under which the act would be valid, that is, that the law is unconstitutional in all of its applications. The court further observed that it disfavors facial challenges because such challenges often involve factually bare-bones records. Our intention with the rule that the court decides constitutional questions on the narrowest possible grounds, and threatened to short-circuit the democratic process by preventing duly enacted laws from being implemented in a manner that is consistent with the Constitution. The court then noted that while states possess a broad power to regulate elections, election regulations that impose a severe burden on associational rights under the First Amendment are subject to strict scrutiny and are upheld only if they are narrowly tailored to serve a compelling state interest. If the statute imposes only modest burdens, however, the state's regulatory interests are generally sufficient to justify reasonable, non-discriminatory restrictions on election procedures. The court quickly disposed of the political party respondent's first argument, that Initiative 872 violated the party's right of association by allowing non-members to participate in the nomination process, and therefore was unconstitutional for the same reasons that the Supreme Court struck down California's primary system in California Democratic Party versus Jones, decided in 2000. The court rejected this argument on the basis that Initiative 872, by its terms, unlike the system struck down in Jones, does not select party nominees to appear on the general election ballot. Under Initiative 872, the top two vote-getters advance to the general election ballot without regard to their expression of party preference. The political parties remain free to nominate or endorse candidates, but as the court observed, whether they do is simply irrelevant. Justice Scalia's dissent did not take issue with this conclusion. The court then turned to the political party's primary argument, that Initiative 872 severely burdened the political party's right of association by compelling them to associate with candidates that they do not endorse. The court rejected this contention for one reason. It depends on the possibility that voters will be confused as to the meaning of the party preference designation. The court then explained that there is no basis to presume that a well-informed electorate will interpret a candidate's party preference designation to mean that the candidate is the party's chosen nominee or that the party associates with or approves the candidate. The court acknowledged that voter confusion might result from the preference designations, but that in the context of a facial challenge, the court could not strike down Initiative 872 on the mere possibility that voter confusion might result, particularly when Initiative 872 had never been implemented and the ultimate form of the ballot was unclear. The ultimate form of the ballot was crucial, the court reasoned, because it was conceivable, in the court's view, that the ballot could be printed, quote, in such a way to eliminate the possibility of widespread voter confusion and with it the perceived threat to the First Amendment, close quote. The court noted that the state argued that the ballot could contain disclaimers explaining that the designation of party preference was not an endorsement, and that the state could educate voters about the limited significance of the designation through explanatory materials provided to voters along with the ballot. The court concluded that it was satisfied that, quote, there are a variety of ways in which the state could implement Initiative 872 that would eliminate any real threat of voter confusion, close quote. On its face, the court concluded Initiative 872 did not impose a severe burden on the associational rights of the political parties. Because Initiative 872 did not severely burden the political parties, the state need not assert a compelling state interest, and the state's interest in providing voters with relevant candidate information was sufficient to sustain Initiative 872 in the view of the court. In his concurring opinion, Chief Justice Roberts acknowledged that permitting a candidate to identify his political party preference on an official election ballot might amount to a forced association between the unwilling party and the candidate, but stated that this issue would turn on the design of the ballot. Quote, if the ballot is designed in such a manner that no reasonable voter would believe that the candidates listed there are nominees or members of or otherwise associated with the parties the candidates claim to prefer, the I-872 primary system would likely pass constitutional muster, close quote. On the present record, however, the Chief Justice could not say that it would be impossible to design such a ballot. In dissent, Justice Scalia argued that regardless of the ultimate configuration of the ballot, Initiative 872 inflicted two distinct injuries to the political parties that amounted to a severe burden of the party's associational rights. First, it forces an unwanted association upon the parties because, as the Attorney General of Washington admitted at argument, no matter how the ballot is configured to express the preference, Initiative 872 does not allow for counter speech by the party on the ballot to renounce the association. Second, it allows candidates outside the party to appropriate the goodwill associated with the party name by encouraging voters to cast their ballots based in part on the trust that they place in the party's name and philosophy. In essence, it amounts to dilution of the party's political trademark to allow non-members to invoke the trademark. Because he concluded that Initiative 872 imposed a heavy burden on political parties, Justice Scalia wrote that it could pass muster only if it served a compelling state interest and were narrowly tailored to achieve that interest. Justice Scalia found that Initiative 872 served no legitimate state interest because the purpose of the preference designation was to undermine the expressive activities of the political parties, but that even if the state had a compelling interest for imposing the burden that it did, Initiative 872 was not narrowly tailored because it did not permit the parties to disclaim on the ballot the asserted association or to designate on the ballot the bona fide nominee of the party. Justice Scalia's conclusion is worth quoting in full. Quote, the right to associate for the election of candidates is fundamental to the operation of our political system, and state action impairing that association bears a heavy burden of justification. Washington's electoral system permits individuals to appropriate the party's trademarks, so to speak, at the most crucial stage of the election, thereby distorting the party's messages and impairing their endorsement of candidates. The state's justification for this, to convey a modicum of relevant information, is not only weak but undeserving of credence. We have here a system which, like the one it replaced, does not merely refuse to assist, but positively impairs the legitimate role of political parties. I dissent from the court's conclusion that the Constitution permits this sabotage. In my view, neither the court's majority opinion nor Chief Justice Roberts' concurrence responded to the second injury identified by Justice Scalia, the appropriation of the party's goodwill and political trademark by outsiders. Just as Coca-Cola has a protected interest in not losing sales to competitors that invoke Coca-Cola's trademark, political parties have, in my view, a First Amendment-protected interest in ensuring that their endorsed or nominated candidates do not lose votes to candidates outside the party that appropriate the party's goodwill by invoking the party's name on the ballot provided by the state. This is especially true in the context of Washington's two-step general election system, in which only two candidates from the primary advance to the general election ballot. If candidates outside the party drain sufficient votes away from the party's endorsed candidate by expressing a preference for the party's endorsed or nominated candidate might be denied a place on the general election ballot. Because of this injury of political trademark dilution, in my view, Justice Scalia is correct. Regardless of the ultimate ballot configuration, Initiative 872 on its face imposes a severe burden on the political parties in violation of the First Amendment. That said, Initiative 872 lives on, and the stage has been set for a series of as-applied challenges that will gainfully employ the election law bar.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.